Chapter 156. A dealer in the contraband. It must have been at least the 10th day, reckoning from the Hijra, that we found ourselves the guests of Varvi, an old hermit of an islander who kept house by himself perhaps a couple of leagues from Talu. A stone's cast from the beach there was a fantastic rock, moss-grown and deep in a dell. It was insulated by a shallow brook, which, dividing its waters, flowed on both sides until united below. Twisting its roots round the rock, a gnarled oa spread itself overhead in a wilderness of foliage, the elastic branch roots depending from the larger boughs insinuating themselves into every cleft, thus forming supports to the parent stem. In some places these pendulous branches, half grown, had not yet reached the rock, swinging their loose fibrous ends in the air like whiplashes. Varvi's hut, a mere coop of bamboos, was perched upon a level part of the rock, the ridge pole resting at one end in a crotch of the oa, and the other propped by a forked bough planted in a fissure. Notwithstanding our cries as we drew near, the first hint the old hermit received of our approach was the doctor's stepping up and touching his shoulder, as he was kneeling over on a stone cleaning fish in the brook. He leaped up and stared at us. But with a variety of uncouth gestures, he soon made us welcome, informing us, by the same means, that he was both deaf and dumb. He then motioned us into his dwelling. Going in, we threw ourselves upon an old mat, and peered round. The soiled bamboos and calabashes looked so uninviting, that the doctor was for pushing on to Talu that night, notwithstanding it was near sunset. But at length we concluded to stay where we were. After a good deal of bustling outside under a decrepit shed, the old man made his appearance with our supper. In one hand he held a flickering taper, and in the other, a huge, flat calabash, scantily filled with viands. His eyes were dancing in his head, and he looked from the calabash to us, and from us to the calabash, as much as to say, "Ah, my lads, what do ye think of this, eh? Pretty good cheer, eh?" But the fish and Indian turnip being none of the best, we made but a sorry meal. While discussing it, the old man tried hard to make himself understood by signs, most of which were so excessively ludicrous, that we made no doubt he was perpetrating a series of pantomimic jokes. The remnants of the feast removed, our host left us for a moment, returning with a calabash of portly dimensions and furnished with a long, hooked neck, the mouth of which was stopped with a wooden plug. It was covered with particles of earth, and looked as if just taken from some place underground. With sundry winks and horrible giggles peculiar to the dumb, the vegetable demijohn was now tapped, the old fellow looking round cautiously, and pointing at it, as much as to intimate that it contained something which was abu, or forbidden. Aware that intoxicating liquors were strictly prohibited to the natives, we now watched our entertainer with much interest. Charging a coconut shell, he tossed it off, and then filling up again, presented the goblet to me. Disliking the smell, I made faces at it, upon which he became highly excited, so much so that a miracle was wrought upon the spot. Snatching the cup from my hands, he shouted out, "Ah, karhari sabili liina arvati matai." In other words, what a blockhead of a white man. This is the real stuff. We could not have been more startled had a frog leaped from his mouth. For an instant, he looked confused enough himself, and then placing a finger mysteriously upon his mouth, he contrived to make us understand that at times he was subject to a suspension of the powers of speech. Deeming the phenomenon a remarkable one, every way, the doctor desired him to open his mouth, so that he might have a look down. But he refused. This occurrence made us rather suspicious of our host. Nor could we afterward account for his conduct, except by supposing that his feigning dumbness might in some way or other assist him in the nefarious pursuits in which it afterwards turned out that he was engaged. This conclusion, however, was not altogether satisfactory. To oblige him, we at last, took a sip of his herba tea, and found it very crude, and strong as Lucifer. Curious to know whence it was obtained, we questioned him, when, lighting up with pleasure, he seized the taper, and led us outside the hut, bidding us follow. After going some distance through the woods, we came to a dismantled old shed of boughs, apparently abandoned to decay. Underneath, nothing was to be seen, but heaps of decaying leaves and an immense, clumsy jar, wide-mouthed, and by some means, rudely hollowed out from a ponderous stone. Here, for a while, we were left to ourselves, the old man placing the light in the jar, and then disappearing. He returned, carrying a long, large bamboo, and a crotched stick. Throwing these down, he poked under a pile of rubbish, and brought out a rough block of wood, pierced through and through with a hole, which was immediately clapped on the top of the jar. Then planting the crotched stick upright about 2 yards distant, and making it sustain one end of the bamboo, he inserted the other end of the ladder into the hole in the block. Concluding these arrangements by placing an old calabash under the farther end of the bamboo. Coming up to us now with a sly significant look, and pointing admiringly at his apparatus, he exclaimed, "Ah, Karhari, Ina Hana Hana Arvati." As much as to say, "This, you see, is the way it's done." His contrivance was nothing less than a native still, where he manufactured his island, Atin. The disarray in which we found it was probably intentional, as a security against detection. Before we left the shed, the old fellow toppled the whole concern over, and dragged it away piecemeal. His disclosing his secret to us thus was characteristic of the Utiores, or contumers of the missionaries among the natives, who, presuming that all foreigners are opposed to the ascendancy of the missionaries, take pleasure in making them confidants, whenever the enactments of their rulers are secretly set at naught. The substance from which the liquor is produced is called E, which is a large, fibrous root, something like yam, but smaller. In its green state, it is exceedingly acrid, but boiled or baked, has the sweetness of the sugar cane. After being subjected to the fire, macerated and reduced to a certain stage of fermentation, the ghee is stirred up with water, and is then ready for distillation. On returning to the hut, pipes were introduced, and, after a while, Long Ghost, who, at first, had relished the herba tea as little as myself, to my surprise, began to wax sociable over it, with Varvi, and, before long, absolutely got mellow, the old toper keeping him company. It was a curious sight. Everyone knows that, so long as the occasion lasts, there is no stronger bond of sympathy and good feeling among men than getting tipsy together. And how earnestly, nay, movingly, a brace of worthies, thus employed, will endeavor to shed light upon and elucidate their mystical ideas. Fancy Varvi and the doctor then, lovingly tippling, and brimming over with a desire to become better acquainted. The doctor politely bent upon carrying on the conversation in the language of his host, and the old hermit persisting in trying to talk English. The result was that, between the two, they made such a fricassee of vowels and consonants, that it was enough to turn one's brain. The next morning, on waking, I heard a voice from the tombs. It was the doctor solemnly pronouncing himself a dead man. He was sitting up, with both hands clasped over his forehead, and his pale face a thousand times paler than ever. "That infernal stuff has murdered me," he cried. "Heavens! My head's all wheels and springs, like the automaton chess player. What's to be done, Paul? I'm poisoned." But, after drinking a herbal draught concocted by our host, and eating a light meal, at noon, he felt much better, so much so that he declared himself ready to continue our journey. When we came to start, the Yankee's boots were missing, and, after a diligent search, were not to be found. Enraged beyond measure, their proprietor said that Varvi must have stolen them, but, considering his hospitality, I thought this extremely improbable, though to whom else to impute the theft I knew not. The doctor maintained, however, that one who was capable of drugging an innocent traveler with Rvati was capable of anything. But it was in vain that he stormed, and Varvi and I searched. The boots were gone. Were it not for this mysterious occurrence, and Varvi's detestable liquors, I would here recommend all travelers going round by the beach to Pardawi, to stop at the rock, and patronize the old gentleman the more especially as he entertains gratis. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.